are top of the league. Say we are top of the league. We are top of the league. Say we are. Hello, everyone. Welcome to a shameless, absolutely shameless celebration of 17 games into the season. The 17 games into the season champions, Manchester United.
That's right, because no title, prospective title winner has ever blown it after 17 games. Ever.
Benny Hudson, a friend of the show, tweeted, I know they don't hand out trophies in January, but could they?
Just like, well, yeah, I think so. I mean, maybe if the pandemic gets any worse, I'd just have to cancel the season. So,
yes, I wouldn't. I would. That would have the biggest asterisk ever, wouldn't it? I mean, I was giddy, absolutely giddy with excitement. We haven't been top of the league since, well, at the end of a game week. I mean, top of the league since September 2017, and we haven't been top of the league in January since 2013.
And what happened in 2013, Paul? What happened?
We won the ruddy league, didn't we? Yeah. We won it.
That's right. Yeah, I think we were seven games into the season last time we were top of the league. And so that doesn't really count. 17, look, I still think that the chances of United actually winning this thing are fairly small.
Oh, yeah.
For reasons that we all know, of course.
Absolutely.
But it's just, you know, I think testament to the progress that United have been making. And it's a strange year and there are lots of caveats, definitely, of course, and in any other year, United may well not be quite so close. But it's you know, so like Liverpool have lost how many games now? A few and drawn way more than we'd expect them to. City had a slow start. So there's lots of caveats. But, focusing on the positive, United made leaps and bounds of progress. Leaps and bounds. More points than any other team since you know who joined the club.
Exactly. Paul Pogba. No, not really. Top of the league in the women's game as well. So, in fact, we are top of the leagues, which is quite some achievement.
It is.
And imagine if we win both of them. What absolute staggering scenes that
scenes
would be.
Scenes it would be, yeah. I'm not betting on that one just yet. Either of them.
The 538 model, which I'm weirdly obsessed with, just out of sort of strange curiosity, we jumped up 2% in our likelihood of winning the league from 10 to 12% after the win against Burnley. So that's what they attribute. 2% is quite a lot, isn't it? You know, if you just do that every game, you end up winning the league or something.
Well that's right. If we win every single game and we get 2% more each game, we're going to get up to... not 100%.
Yeah, not 100%. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you need 50 games.
I think somehow the numbers would increase rapidly as you got towards it. Yes. Statistics and all that.
And of course, the game at the weekend has taken on this absolute... I mean, you know, it's nice of us to kind of give the second place team in the league a chance to have a crack at us straight away. Wow. We'll talk about that game a lot in the second half of the show. But first of all, what did you make of the performance against Burnley? I thought that United... I found the first half just a very difficult watch as a game of football, not helped by a 5.5 minute VAR that was given 4 minutes of added time. Boo. But then the second half was a bit of a thrill ride, to be honest.
Yeah, look, the first half, I think United played into Burnley's hands quite a bit. I mean, Johan Cruyff used to say, make the pitch very small when you're defending and make it very big when you're attacking. And United didn't really do that at all. And got into some trouble with Burnley's sort of pretty direct approach, I have to say. I mean, they really are a throwback. It feels like they're getting more of a throwback. Maybe it's just because they're a particularly bad version of Burnley right now. But it was just really messy, and United let it get messy, got involved in some aggro, which I'm sure suited Burnley fine. They want to reduce it all to a scrap and a fight and stop other teams playing. And they did that quite effectively, I thought, in the first half. And United just needed to expand the pitch. And I think you saw after half time, and this, I'm sure Ollie's made it as a point of this, because we saw Pogba switching play like constantly after halftime, just trying to expand that pitch and trying to get Martial and Rashford just a little bit wider to stretch Burnley. And Burnley, conversely, went really narrow and really deep, and as a result, they just couldn't release the pressure at all, and it was just incessant, wasn't it, for the second 45.
Yeah, absolutely. So I haven't looked up any of the data or the numbers or the XG or anything about this game, so this is entirely impressionistic, really. But it was, the only real meaningful incident in the first half that I can remember off the top of my head is, oh, well, Martial nearly scored a bicycle kick, but it was ended up coming off a defender, but I think it was bound for the top corner, which might have kickstarted his confidence, because the second half cannot have done his confidence any good. I'm seeing him get no end of stick, and I just think, like, people A, forget, and B, just want to be right. You know, it's like, we've seen his quality and he's clearly in a bad trough. But then the Schrodinger's sendings off. The Luke Shaw makes a tackle. Gary Neville, who later apologised for the poor quality of his commentary, saying over and over and over again that Luke Shaw didn't get the ball so he could be in trouble, whilst watching replays of Luke Shaw getting the ball over and over and over again. And then the play continues up the pitch. Cavani is in a clear goal-scoring opportunity.
Ish.
Yeah. But that never existed in the new quantum mechanics laws of the Premier League. And Shaw got a yellow card.
Yeah, which in the end, I think it was probably the right decision all round. I mean, it is a foul. He has got a toe on the ball, but the follow through is clearly on the leg, and it's a bit high. I think Sean Dyche said afterwards that sometimes it could have been a red, and he's probably not wrong there.
Yeah.
The velocity wasn't that high, at least from Shaw. It was from, who did he foul? I've forgotten now. Burnley player was steaming in. But there's multiple vectors all moving at the same time here. So Shaw's clearly going for the ball, and he's got part of it, but not enough of it. And the follow through a millisecond later, and it's, you know, the leg's planted on the ground, not on the dude's shin. So all of that's taken into account, and we probably got the right decision, which was a shame though, because VAR and all that, people kind of hate the slowness of that, and I hate the slowness of that. That doesn't do the game any good. I mean, it got to the right decision, and it was a complex one because they're having to look at multiple things, and you don't get that every single game, but 5 and odd minutes didn't really do much for the spectacle, I think.
No, and it is absolutely outrageous that not that amount of time is then added on at the end of the half. I actually thought the referee was really, really poor. Was the Maguire goal in the first half as well? Yeah, I think it might have been, actually.
Yes, it was, yeah.
Because it was at that end, wasn't it? And I think that's the opposite end to the one we actually... Yeah, it is. It's the opposite end to the one we scored in.
Yeah, I mean, I've swung back and forth on the Maguire goal, because at the time, I'm thinking, hand in the back, that feels like... And is the hand first? Probably, sort of. It feels probably just about right. But,
yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know. Not that long ago, that might not have been given. Maguire's clearly got the jump on him. He's beating him anyway. And we talked about Maguire's actual lack of prowess in the air quite frequently on this show, because his scoring record is really poor despite the reputation. But he's a great leap, and he's stuck it in top bins. So,
yeah, it's a fantastic header. I mean,
it's great header.
The consensus appears to be, oh, game's gone. I mean, I have to say, at no point watching that did I think, oh, game's gone, because I thought, well, even though he has clearly got the beating of him, that his hand's gone down into the defender. And it then becomes just a question of, like, force, right? Are you shoving the defender down so the defender can't get off the ground? Or are you just putting your arms out because you're jumping? And these are decisions which are very difficult for the referee to make. So what was it ruled out by VAR, or was it deemed a foul and then not overturned? Do you know?
I think the whistle went really quickly.
Yeah, because that makes...
Yes, yeah, I think that's right, yeah.
Because that would make more sense if the referee makes a bad decision, gets it wrong, and then you can't say that's a clear and obvious error because there's some grey area about whether it's a foul or not. That kind of makes sense. If that's a goal and then it's overturned, that feels
a bit... Yeah, no, because I was thinking it was offside because the whistle went straight away. But then, yeah, realised the referee had given it. So, yes, and the way the VAR works, it's essentially there to correct errors from the referee. So they tend not to overturn marginal calls like that. So, but and it was marginal.
Yeah.
There used to be a time you used to hand off players. Probably not. You can leverage them. It's not like rugby where they all pretend that they don't jump at the line out and leverage the other dude's shoulders while jumping 12 feet in the air and the dude's 24 stone, you know. No, ref, we didn't do that, honest. But, there used to be some physicality and obviously more of that's being pulled from the game, which I'm sure Sean Dyche doesn't like, except when he gets the decision his way.
Yeah. Eric Bailly was magnificent in this game once again, I thought. I mean... This guy.
Yes, we talked about his injury last time out, getting the elbow in the neck, or Dean Henderson's
knee.
Knee. Some appendage, anyway. And yeah, good that he's back. I mean, he's just such a better balance in the middle with Bailly in there. Just so much better.
Yeah, it's not even close. And then let's talk about Pogba, because I thought in one you mentioned him switching to play a lot in the second half. I thought, I mean, he made a phenomenal number of ball recoveries. Him and Matic between them won the ball back 20 times across the game. I think 8 for Paul Pogba, which given that his primary role in the side was as a kind of creative force, is pretty remarkable. He had a really good game with and without the ball. One of the things I thought about... the second half was he seemed to get himself forward more. Like he felt very stranded deep in the second half, and it did feel like he joined in the attacking play more in the second half. I haven't seen heat maps or anything, but that's just how it felt.
Yeah, and I think he had to, didn't he? I mean, and especially with Burnley dropping deeper and deeper, he's surely got to be, you know, game intelligence and just take the game by the scruff of the neck. I mean, his role in this system is a part of the double pivot. So that's why he's not getting forward as much as he might want to. He's certainly in the attacking third much more when he's playing in that diamond or on the left side of the 4-2-3-1, isn't he? But in this role, he's a bit deeper. But this was all action Pogba. Made lots of tackles, lots of ball recoveries, more passes than anyone else in the game, scored the goal. You know, this is good. And of course, the goal colours everyone's impression in a game like that where he didn't score the goal. I don't know whether he'd be getting the plaudits because the reaction to Pogba is, you know, fairly negative first, I would say, from the masses. But good for him. You know, this was an excellent game, and I think he's been in an excellent run of form. And Ollie talked about it after the game, saying, look, he had an injury, he had COVID, and now we're looking to get the best from him, hopefully.
Someone, I'm really sorry that I haven't got it to hand. Someone asked the question, is this kind of like a real triumph of man management for Solskjaer? Because when Raiola spoke up when Jose was the manager, that was when all the virus chat started, you know. Whereas the way that Solskjaer's responded to Raiola chipping off has been pretty much perfect, essentially.
Yeah, look, I think people are... I mean, he played it very diplomatically, Solskjaer. And because, I guess, you know, football is a pretty insular world. There's not that many players out there and there's not that many agents. And at some point, even if Pogba does leave in the summer and everyone's assuming that he's going to, United will end up having to do business with Raiola, not least because Erling Haaland is a Raiola client. So burning the bridges, unfortunately, isn't an option. He played it very diplomatically. And I don't know whether all these things are actually linked to Pogba's form or whether he's just fit now. He had the ankle injury, which ruined almost all of last season. And people like to attribute that to somehow not wanting it enough or not loving the shirt or there's no passion. But I think that ruined that season. And a different ankle injury and the coronavirus ruined a lot of the beginning of this season. Mm. And now we're seeing something more. And Pogba is important to United because he can put that kind of performance in. But he also creates a lot of balance for United in a way that, although the McFred partnership gives that sort of energy in midfield, you obviously lose the ability with the ball. So
yeah,
we'll see. I mean, we'll talk about Liverpool in a bit, and it'll be an interesting test to see whether Pogba's in the side for that one. I assume he will be, because actually I think Martial's injury is going to take that decision away from Ollie, and it will end up with a diamond. But we can talk about that a bit more later.
That question was from Simon Lindmark, by the way. I looked that up during that very good, thorough answer. On the Touchline Fracker podcast, one of the people there was saying that the thing about United at the moment is that you have Rashford, Martial, Pogba and Fernandes, and if one or two of those really turn up in a game, they're too much for almost whoever we play against. And I do think that's true. I would say that really Pogba was the only one who turned up last night. Rashford with an absolutely brilliant assist in among another really tough evening. And he is making a habit this season of making telling contributions when he's not even playing that well overall. Like, he's not having his best game, but he's getting goals and assists. An absolute nonsense hatchet job in the Telegraph today from a journalist called Luke Edwards, who should be, he should just be absolutely ashamed of himself, and have no compunction in calling out that nonsense. Like, oh well, it's all very well helping these kids, but he's not playing that well, is he? It's like, should we look up these goals and a let's look up these goals and assist numbers, and b which one of these two things is ultimately more important anyway?
Look, I just thought that was a wordy way of saying shut up and dribble. I mean, it's in the same
exactly. So yeah, sod that guy. Like, that guy, I hope that guy goes to bed like thinking, oh my God, how have I become an agent of this kind of thing?
He probably isn't. He has chosen to work for those employers. Anyway, he was getting a bit defensive on Twitter when people were calling him out.
Pathetic.
People haven't read this,
brilliant piece in Media Watch on Football 365, the headline of which was, "We have read it and we wish we hadn't." Sod that guy.
Rashford lets this all wash off. I mean, and he was quite right this week to, it's interesting. You'd have thought Rashford posting these pictures, slight diversion since we're talking about it, posting these pictures of the care packages that the government is supposed to be sending out to families in need, and it's supposed to be £30 worth of food, right? You'd have thought this would unite both libertarians and socialists to say, you know, one, you know, hungry kids deserve to be looked after because that's the role of the government. And two, libertarians, wouldn't you like your government money to get value for money rather than getting what looked like about £3.50 worth of food and the other £26.50 going to a private company who's just milking the government for all it's worth? But I don't know. Those are the times. And, you know, we've had billions and billions of pounds worth of government waste with PPE and other coronavirus-related contracts. So this is just another to throw on the pile, I guess.
Yeah, this one was particularly, I mean, the inhumanity. This is what Rashford is so good at, in a way. He's constantly makes it human first. Like, he's never talks about politics, except when he has occasion to, like, praise the politicians for reacting. And it's, you know, Marcus Rashford is a smart man. He knows that Boris Johnson does not care about this at all. I'm sure Marcus Rashford knows Boris Johnson doesn't care about this, because otherwise he wouldn't have to ring him every 5 minutes to go, I can't help but noticing that you've given a third of a carrot to a hungry family. That, by the way, if you haven't seen this story, is not some sort of exaggeration. These absolute psychopaths were chopping up carrots and giving a stub of carrot. Like, a carrot costs... at Christmas time, you were getting a kilo and a half of carrots for 30p. Even at the kind of any time of the year, carrots are extremely cheap. These people are evil, and Marcus Rashford is a hero.
Yeah, and on the pitch, not his best game, but he got an assist. So
yeah,
stick that up your pike and smoke it.
On the pitch, these people are evil, and he combined with Paul Pogba to defeat them. So, you know.
That's right. Let's talk about Pogba's goal then, because...
oh, my God.
It's such a beautifully sweet strike. And you know, good interplay. Bruno Fernandes was involved, and Rashford in the build-up. And then just a lovely hit. I mean, shame the... the visuals of it are spoiled on second viewing by the deflection. But still, nice way to win a game.
Yeah, fantastic. The technique to get power and direction on that ball with his leg at that angle. Not too many footballers that could do that, I would say. Excellent. And in the end, a thoroughly deserved 3 points. It got a little hairy at the end because we didn't get the second. And there were a couple of moments where it looked like Burnley might cause a problem. But it would have left United, I'm sure, feeling pretty hard done by. What happened with the Martial injury?
Well, I mean, it looked like he's tweaked a hamstring of some kind, didn't it? So I don't know. But, you know, hobbling off like that, I'm just going to make the assumption that he's definitely not making Liverpool, and it could be a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Which is, I don't know, maybe a little bit of time out of the limelight will do him a bit of good. He'll come back refreshed and revitalised. It's, you know, United have much better balance with him in the side. And... you know, he started last season really slow, and it was the second half of last season that he really exploded when he came back from injury. So he's hoping that happens again. In the meantime, Cavani played 90 minutes, did he?
Yeah,
he had 90 minutes. He was certainly a handful, and there was a lot of things that kind of nearly came off for him. The one where he got the ball from someone on the right-hand side and had the ball in a really crowded penalty area and took a moment and tried to curl it into the top corner. Now, he didn't execute his finish quite right, but the way he made space for himself and aimed the ball at basically the only place where it wouldn't hit a Burnley player, some legs or a chest or a head somewhere... you know, I thought it was quite impressive.
Yeah, I mean, three shots, a couple of key passes, an okay performance. So he hasn't, I mean, he's a very different player, obviously. His movement's off the ball, not with the ball. And unlike Rashford and Martial, it's the other way around a little bit. So, and I just kind of thought beforehand that this was an obvious one for Cavani to play. I don't think it really does Rashford loads of help there, because he's playing off the right and it's not quite as natural for him, is it? I mean, he always wants to come inside, but then he's coming inside on the wrong foot. But, you know, Cavani's a good option in the squad. I guess he will start at Liverpool just because Martial's injury. I'm not sure he would have done but for that injury. And I wonder whether it'll change the system as well. But, you know, he did all right. So,
my last point about this game would just be to go back to talk about Gary Neville for a second. Steve Armo tweeting, Neville's only a few more games away from saying Solskjaer was offside at the Nou Camp live on air. United fans in general kind of united in the idea that Gary Neville's attempt to put on a facade of impartiality, because everyone knows it's not real, has gone too far, and he clearly struggles when United are on air and ends up just being massively overcritical of United over and over and over again. Jay Motti, friend of the show, tweeting that this is Gary Neville's worst performance since West Brom. Neville himself apologising afterwards and making up for it by filming himself, leaving Old Trafford humming Gary Neville is a red EA Scousers and pulling a really good face. So, yeah.
Not Old Trafford.
Oh, yeah, Turf Moor, my bad.
Turf Moor, yeah. It's. I mean, look, I feel like we've talked about this with Gary Neville a few times down the years, and it's true. He overcompensates. He can't quite because he doesn't do this in European games. For example, he's hyper partisan the British team or the English team. You know, he's fully behind, and that's okay. And like everyone knows, he's a United fan. And same with Carragher. I mean, it's like there's no hiding it. So. I guess he feels like he has to give some kind of balance. His role there is to give colour, and he should stick to that.
Yeah. But yeah.
Shut up and dribble, Gary.
It was a very shut up and hum. It was a very, very, very enjoyable little video. And I had spent 2 hours furious with Gary Neville and it instantly dissipated and I fell in love with him all over again. So what are you going to do? I'm easy pleased. Seeing the collective joy among United fans was so delightful. And United fans, they're not stupid. We're not stupid. Everyone knows it's not very likely we're going to win the league. But it's been a really, really long time since United were in a title race. I mean, we haven't actually been in a title race since we last won the league. So if we are in one this season, why wouldn't you absolutely enjoy every second of it? And the shamelessness is going to run and run and run, and so it should. I mean, when I say run and run and run, I mean until at least 4:30 on Sunday.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not sure I'm even going to call this a title race just yet.
No, we'll, sure.
We'll see. We haven't got to the halfway point of the season yet. Yeah. But it's nice that we're not 15 points behind at this stage of the season.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
Has been a fairly regular occurrence over the last few years, hasn't it? So yeah, we can enjoy this, and even if it doesn't bring anything at the end, you know, progress is there as long as United don't fall off a cliff in the second half of the season, which we'll see, because weird season and all that, key injuries, key people, touch wood, never happen, and things could get derailed. But you know, hey, this is good, isn't it?
Yeah.
It'd be nice to go one step further than like a semi-final or second place, but yeah.
Yes,
we'll see.
It would. And I guess should we take a break, and then since we're talking about this, take a break and then talk about the big one. The first test against Sri Lanka. No.
Spurs v Fulham, no?
All right. If you want more from the show in between shows, check us out on the socials. We are NQATpod on Instagram, Ed's at NQATpod on Twitter, and we are under our real names on Facebook at No Question About That. Right, so it's always a big game. It's amazing that there's something on this. I mean, you just said before the break, if there's whether or not United are in a title race, I guess we know. I mean, if we win this game, we have to concede that United are in a title race, because we'll be 6 points clear of last season's champions. I mean, City won today at 6 p.m. That's a weird time for Premier League games to happen. But apparently it was a pretty laboured win.
About the first half, didn't see the second half. So, yeah, seemed pretty laboured in the first half.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's big for them that they won, but it's quite big for us that they didn't look very good, because this is the key, really. If City are really, really, really good all the second half of the season, it's going to be very difficult for anyone else, I would say, unless Liverpool kick into top gear again. But they absolutely have not been in top gear this season. And
they have not, no. And especially recently. I mean, they've barely played recently for one reason or another. But they had the draw against West Brom, the draw against Newcastle, lost to Southampton. They had a game cancelled, am I right in saying? Then they had the game against Villa. They didn't have a game this week. So anyway, I don't know. They've had a long time off since their last Premier League game. And played a sort of first team against the Villa children, quite a few of them. But yeah, we'll see. They might pay for all of this with congestion later.
Well, except
they've
not
definitely
really
had more time off than us, and that may benefit them greatly on Sunday.
there's no reason that they should pay with fixture congestion down the line, particularly given that they're
because they've played 17 games.
So they're not behind City. City have still got a game to play. Villa have still only played 15 games. So somehow they're going to finish their season during the Euros, I think.
They definitely can't do that. Yeah, look, I mean, as we spoke about in the backers content last time out, flexibility is going to have to happen. I mean, the clubs don't like it. The managers hate it. I mean, if you saw Scott Parker and Jose Mourinho talking about the very hastily rearranged Spurs-Fulham game that's playing as we speak. And it was deeply unfair on Fulham, of course, because Scott Parker may well have picked a very different team for that cup game he had at the weekend. But I think it's just going to have to happen. It's otherwise, football's just going to shut down again. And we'll then be talking about massive losses and players taking huge pay cuts. So, you know, stop the politics and just get on with it. Because as I pointed out to a few people on Twitter, the COVID positivity rate in the Premier League is like six times less than the national population, right? That's of test taken and positive samples, right? The bubbles are working, even if Tory MPs and some papers don't like it, right? So we'll have to be flexible. Everyone's going to be strange season. But what is not strange is United versus Liverpool, top of the table, mega clash. It's just a real shame there aren't going to be United fans at Anfield to taunt the Scousers about being second.
Yes, quite. So Diego Jota is out. Naby Keita might be back. Joel Matip might be back, but it's looking a little unlikely. Joe Gomez and Van Dijk are obviously long-term injuries there. So we might have that kind of fourth and fifth choice centre-back pairing, which they could really struggle with Cavani. The weird thing about Liverpool is that their big boys have not been functioning as you would expect their big boys to. Like, this is, they, without Van Dijk, everyone assumed that they would struggle defensively, and that's not really been the area where there's been a big problem. And the problem has often been in scoring goals recently.
Sure. I mean, Salah's still got 13 in 16 games. I mean, it's not like it's a poor return from
him. No, that's true. It's a very good return.
I mean, Mane not quite keeping up this season, but Jota came in, scored some very important goals. Firmino doesn't ever score goals, so, you know, they don't base it around that. So they still take a lot of shots and still score a decent amount of goals, Liverpool, and they will be a threat. I mean, it would be nice if Salah and Mane got an injury before Sunday, to be honest. Could do with that more than Liverpool's defenders. So, at least if Bailly is fit and can stand another game and his body doesn't break down in training this week, at least we got that pace in the back line, which is important against Liverpool because they are quick and very mobile up front.
So I knew I hadn't gone mad. Salah scored against Aston Villa's under-12s, but hadn't scored before that since the 7-0 against Palace, which has also distorted Liverpool's goal-scoring figures this season a fair amount. Since that game, they drew 1-1 with West Brom, Salah didn't score, 0-0 Newcastle, and lost 1-0 to Southampton. So, I mean, their form before that Villa game was absolutely shocking, and I don't think you can count that Villa game as being any test of anything whatsoever, because I mean, it's no exaggeration, it was literally against children.
Sure, yeah. I mean, the Newcastle games and the West Brom game were very similar in that, I mean, West Brom basically until the second half didn't have a player go over the halfway line. It was nosebleed territory. And Newcastle weren't that different, actually. They were very prepared to sit deep and defend. Those were the problems. Southampton was very different, actually. So although Liverpool did have a lot of possession in that game, Southampton had a lot of good chances as well, right? It was just a very good performance. And like back-to-the-wall stuff right at the end, but not for most of the game. So,
no.
Yeah, sure.
And they could have made it two a number of times, Southampton.
Could have done, yeah.
A few good chances. So I wonder what United's approach is going to be in this one. I guess that becomes then the fascinating question. Are we going to see the kind of 4-2-3-1 with Pogba as part of the three? Maybe Cavani up top, Rashford on the left. Pogba on the left, Rashford on the right, I guess it'll be. Bruno through the middle, and then McFred as a double. McFred is surely... It's surely an inevitability for this game.
Oh yeah, they'll both play. And I think the question really is this more of a diamond and it's a bit more narrow, or does Rashford play on the right and Pogba play on the left? And actually, where we've seen this in recent games, it looks like both, doesn't it? Depending on whether United have or don't have the ball.
Yeah.
So it works for Pogba. I mean, that license to get forward in either system because he's got the two players protecting. Means he gets involved in the game more higher up the pitch.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess Cavani's going to play, right? That's he's just.
I'm pretty sure it'd be. Yeah, I mean, given Martial's out, I mean, unless Ollie has an aneurysm or something in the next couple of days and picks Daniel James.
I wonder whether there might be, not necessarily James, but I wonder if there might be a left field custom pick for this game. I can't think who though.
I mean, Greenwood's not in enough good form to kind of justify selection right now. And given that Ollie would tend to go a bit more defensive in this game, I think he's going to want McFred in. For sure, but Pogba's in form, and so it'd be a tough one to drop him for Greenwood, basically.
Yeah.
So,
about a back three?
I mean, unless Greenwood played up front with Rashford, but that combo hasn't exactly worked when they've played together. So.
No. What about a back three?
I mean, they haven't played that for so long.
And was it Leipzig? Did they play one against Leipzig?
Yeah.
And it was a horrible disaster. Mess. It feels like that would be crazy, to be honest. Because also, do you really want to... Is a 4-3-3 the system you want to go up against with a back three, really?
1v1, I mean, sure, but then they just end up pulling... I mean, I guess there's an argument for it in that Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold are such attacking fullbacks. It would hamper United's attacking play greatly if that back five is pinned back constantly.
Yeah.
By the Liverpool's front three and the fullback. So I don't know if it's the right balance, honestly, for this game with Liverpool in this form and with those injuries.
I really hope that the balance of United's intent, not necessarily like the team selection or whatever, because I do think McFred's an inevitability, but I do hope that United go into this game with a lot of intent. I think they will. I think that there's a side that must surely be quite full of confidence. Clearly the kind of character of Bruno Fernandes is that kind of positive, driving on type character. We know that Rashford is, you know, that sort of person to an extent, and we've seen like Pogba's friendship with Bailly and that kind of energy and enthusiasm and intent together on the pitch. It's nice to see, and I hope we have some of that collective. Talking of Bailly and Pogba, one thing we didn't mention is the permanent transfer of Timothy Fosu-Mensah to Bayer Leverkusen, a lovely video of Pogba and Bailly saying goodbye to him. And clearly, Eric Bailly, extraordinarily fond of Timothy Fosu-Mensah.
I mean, he needs a club, he needs a break, he needs this to work out for him. Otherwise, he's 24 now.
Yeah.
And he's just never really, I mean, he's 6 years of treading water, basically. Injuries, absolutely. Bad loans. He needs this to work. I do wonder whether it's just a level too big for him. But we'll see, you know, and whether he wouldn't have been better going back to Ajax, who were interested. So
I was surprised. I was surprised that he went to Bundesliga club. But then you watch defending in the Bundesliga and it's all over the place. So you can probably get away with it. It's interesting. A lot of people thought he would be like a really big player for the future for Cimento. I'm sure you could find a clip of me somewhere on this show in the past saying something like that, but I've not had that opinion for a very, very long time, I have to say.
No. He just said it's one of those ones he needs a club. No movement on any other players. I mean, Solskjaer did say this week that it would be our usual. It's really hard to bring in players. No one wants to give up the best players, yada, yada. But it's more likely two or three will leave. And that seems about right. I mean, it's a bloated squad. I mean, maybe they'll let Romero go. They didn't in the summer because they were trying to get money for him, but he's out of contract. So, like, it's something. Or pay him. Or it's, you know, it's nothing and pay him. Looks like Rojo is just going to wait out his contract. So his offers are domestic, apparently, and nowhere near as big. So he's just going to pocket the money. There was talk of Jesse Lingard. I know they triggered the extension of his contract recently. Talk of Jesse Lingard, perhaps making a loan to, where was he talked about going to Serie A, I think, or OGC Nice, who are basically bankrupt at the moment, owned by a private equity firm who are suffering somewhat. So yeah, I don't know. That wouldn't be a bad move. Well-run club, apart from the financial problems.
Yeah, well-run team, maybe.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, they took a very interesting view on this. You know, their view was that this is a private equity company saying, we will play in a certain way. We will play with a high press and lots of young players and a very clear-eyed view about why they're going to do that. And they're going to do that because you can get less, you pay more for the technical skills than you do for people who run a lot.
Ah, well, Jesse Lingard would be an excellent match for them.
Well,
then.
There you go. Exactly. Good match.
Yeah. Interesting. All right, back to the Liverpool game briefly. The one thing, obviously, that Liverpool have is very creative fullbacks. That's really, apart from the front three, where all their creativity comes from. So I guess a lot's going to rest on Shaw and Wan-Bissaka. Shaw's still in really good form. Wan-Bissaka not, but can do a defensive job. So, you know, that...
Yeah, if he stops getting himself out of position all of the time, which has been a real failing this season. Mm. So, you know, defensively sound when he's in the right position, attacking, poor progression numbers and not too many crosses and assists or chance creation. But that's an old story that hasn't quite changed yet. No. I mean, it'd be interesting. Balance of Liverpool's midfield is always interesting, isn't it? Because they do tend to play fairly prosaic players in the middle of the field. I mean, whether it's Henderson, Wijnaldum, and I don't know who the third will be. I guess probably Curtis Jones if Fabinho's in the back four, probably. And like different styles of players, but all water carriers of different kinds. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not, you know, I mean, it's an insult, isn't it? Because Eric Cantona turned it into an insult, but... you know, of the three, Jones
is
the biggest
they?
passing range for sure. And Wijnaldum is most, you know, apt to get forward. And Henderson runs funny.
But listen, is also good. Like, this is Jordan Henderson is good. You're pulling a face, but that's because he plays for Liverpool.
He's not that good, is he? He's just not that good.
He's not flashy, but United could have done with Jordan Henderson a lot over the last 5 years. But anyway.
We've got our own Jordan Henderson. It's just an upgrade in McSauce.
Yeah, heck yeah.
And he doesn't run funny.
Does he? He's just quite an upright run. Scott McTominay.
He's getting a muscular run,
yeah.
Isn't he? You know.
Yeah. Good. I guess that United's midfield, on the other hand, I mean, you need to attack Liverpool down the centre because their central defensive partnership is just nowhere near the level right now because of all the injuries. So just really target intricate play, get so many penalties, get three penalties in this game. Lads, that's what we want.
I mean, one at the cop end, be mwah, chef's kiss. Sweet, wouldn't it?
It really would.
To win it, 97th minute, something like that. Perfect.
I mean, listen, a draw is a great result in this game in the context of the season. A win is...
even greater result.
Yeah, a win is like starting to lose the run of ourselves. So somebody said like, oh, you need to do an emergency podcast after we beat Liverpool. I'm like, that's not an emergency podcast. That's just we do a podcast after every game. So I know yes. We took a break, but like, hey, we're here. We're not going anywhere yet.
No, we're just going to skip this one. We'll be with you next week.
Yeah.
I mean, we obviously play them and they play Burnley midweek and we play Fulham. So, yeah, you know, come on, Burnley. We could be 9 points clear come this time next week.
Yeah. Although City might start catching up based on the games in hand or whatever, but you know, who cares? For now, we leave you with Manchester United sat pretty atop the league table in their divine, the place where they have a divine right to be, looking down on all who would attempt to deign to be top of the Premier League. There's only one team top of the Premier League.
As a friend of the show, Darren Richmond, famously said, he wished he'd been more of a all those years that we were number one.
Yes, I'm not sure that's the word that Darren used because he's generally politer than you in general.
I'm paraphrasing for him.
Yeah, of course. Brill, thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back after the Liverpool game. Oh, my God, come on, you Reds.